It is Saturday, March 26, 2011, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, we have geek news in the first half, and the second half, your questions about comments about technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
So you're living in a world that you don't know nothing about. Sitting at your keyboard paralyzed with doubt. But just sit tight, we're here to help you out. We don't know it all, but we'll tell you what we found out. And if it's all Greek to you, then let us speak geek to you. We're here each week for you on your radio.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. In the second half of the show, we'll invite you to join us via phone. You're welcome to do so at the phone number 800-655-5877. You can ask us anything technical you'd like or make comments about technology.
So if it's all Greek to you, then let us speak geek to you. We're here each week for you on your radio.
Geek Speak is a Creative Commons endeavor, share and share alike, which means you can create content using our content as long as you give us some credit. If you'd like to give us a theme song like Michael Saunders today did, thank you, Michael, please feel free to send us an email of the MP3 or WAV file, and we'll listen to it, and if we like it, we'll put it on air. I think we're going to fade this out and start up a rainy day special here on the central coast of California. I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Al Luck. Al, he's a new media architect. Hi, Al.
Hello, everybody.
We also have Lindsay Lonnie, system analyst. Hello, Lindsay.
Good morning.
And second time only in the air room, Laurel Klein, development relations. Hi.
Hi there.
So that means that you, for the company you work for, which we won't even mention, but you speak to developers and help them work?
I help them build great applications that they then use to make hundreds and thousands and millions of dollars.
That's fantastic. Do you get a part of that? You get a cut?
No. I just get the joy and satisfaction of helping another person.
Which is more than enough, that's
it. It's made her 100 air.
Al, it's raining and wet. You got a new iPad. How do you protect it and deal with the rainy, wet weather?
Well, I found some ways to protect it. My actual use way of protecting it is to just shove it under my jacket.
When you're outside?
Yeah. But there's an interesting website called Rainy Day Magazine. And it has different things in it, you know, different areas. And I guess the premise is that you can, things that you can do on a rainy day. And one of the things I found in there, you know, they review a lot of products too. And one of the products is called the OtterBox, which is a company that makes enclosures for things like computers and iPads
and
you know, phones. And I don't know if you can actually put an otter in these things, but they have quite a few things, and they all tend to be waterproof. So they even have things that you can put a whole desktop computer inside of, which makes it waterproof. And I guess if you...
Does it operate inside there? Or is it just
it
in
does,
there?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the whole... Cool. And they have things for, you know, your iPad and things like that.
So I'd assume that's the kind of commercial side of Rainy Day Magazine, in the sense that you can buy things for your tech. Do they have anything else up there?
Yeah, there's a neat thing in here. It's a link, and you know, all these things are going to be linked to on geekspeak.org.
Great.
But one of the things is it shows how to make your own stylus for your tablet computer, such as an iPad or some other thing. They all work on this conductive type of method.
There's a Pogo commercial thing called a Pogo, which I've used. It's kind of fun.
Griffin, I think, makes that. Right. Or, you know, there's quite a few items out there that you can do that. But this actually, on this Rainy Day Projects, it shows you how to make one very simply out of like a Bic pen and some copper wire. And
that sounds dangerous.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you necessarily have to use copper wire, but the way they did it, it was kind of cool because they kind of compressed the copper wires, you know, real fine wires, and shoved them in this pen. And it makes this conductive surface, so you're able to, like, brush onto the iPad, like if you say if you have a drawing application or something like that, it actually works like a real brush.
So it's not just a point location, so it has width and characteristics like that.
Which is pretty
cool. That's really cool.
And it shows you how to make it, and it pretty much costs like nothing.
You got
to
make one of those for the next drawing class you take. You have that.
I know. I mean, it's really neat. There are other styluses, the Pogo Sketch, like you said, the Griffin stylus, the Nomad brush. There's a bunch of different things. But this particular link will show you how to make one yourself. For like nothing.
You know, if I had a new iPad and a rainy afternoon to do nothing, I'd make one myself.
Yeah.
I don't know about the stylus thing, though.
Why not?
I'm stuck on the otter thing because all I'm picturing now is an entire underwater office where I can be in scuba gear and work.
Sweet.
Well, we're pretty close to that right now in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
It does feel that way. Does feel that way. Well, Lindsay, since you started speaking, what's your next story? So,
that's what I get for interjecting.
I know. Do you want to tell something about Google?
Yeah, sure. Google started testing Google Music internally. So it's kind of a rumor thing right now. We don't know when it's going to be released, but they're saying...
But it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be so awesome.
Google Music.
I'm a huge Pandora fan, so I'm a little conflicted about it, but I knew this was coming because I know how Google is.
And Pandora is a streaming music where you kind of choose your genre and it plays songs in that genre. It's kind of like an auto DJ.
Exactly.
Kind of the antithesis of a local radio station like KSB, but... It's very functional.
Yeah.
And then there's also things like Groove Shark, which you actually specify specific songs and play. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what Google Music will be, right?
Yeah, we're not sure what kind of algorithm, because I know that Pandora, I believe, is built on top of the genetic algorithms and stuff like that. So if you say you like something, it remembers patterns of music and rhythms and suggests other things you might like, things like that.
Maggie is constantly trying to get a women-only music channel on Pandora. So every time there's a male song, she cancels it. You can't do that. You can't, like, choose that. So she's always... So I'm always thinking, well, the algorithm's not really set up for that. You know, I'm like,
right.
Is it going to work? And it's pretty functional at this point.
You mean, like, female singers?
Female singers, yeah, basically. Female vocalist, just to have a female voice singing,
right.
Which makes sense. You'd want to be able to choose that, but because of Pandora's kind of algorithmic way, you've got to just say no, no, no to all these songs.
Right.
And eventually you get kind of what you want.
But then you'd have a hard time creating another, you'd have to have like another profile to have other stuff you liked or something.
No, no, well, that's the thing is you can do a playlist, you can say no to this playlist only, right?
Uh-huh.
So the one's playlist is the actual thing that gets modified, not whether you liked it or disliked it, but whether you want it in the playlist.
Well, that's even cooler.
But Google is going to do it differently, we just don't know how.
Right.
The other thing is, you know, iTunes right now is the dollar a song kind of thing, you own it. And there's other services, though I haven't ever subscribed to them, that allow you to monthly fee in any songs you want. You can basically listen to any song you want, anytime you want, and it's only a monthly fee of a certain amount. I'm hoping that Google does something like that, because I think that's pretty a neat way to do it. Though, now that Groove Shark works, I don't seem to need that, because I can look up a song if I want to look up a song.
Right.
Though it's only Flash-based, which is kind of annoying on the iOS's devices.
One of the things that's causing hang-ups with this and why it keeps getting pushed out is that they're in negotiations with major record labels and production companies to get rights. But the reason is that labels have never given out licensing rights for digital lockers before. And that's kind of what Google's trying to do, is have an online cloud-based locker.
Right.
So you have all your music up on the cloud. And they're also looking to allow people to put their existing music libraries on their servers. So that's another component of it and why it's taking a long time.
I would love that.
But
you'd love that?
You know, the thing is, you'd think that, like, if say, I put, like, you know, some Talking Heads song up there or something, okay, that's in my locker, and I have this digital song that I own, that I bought, and I ripped, or whatever I did. You'd think that they would think of some algorithm so that they would just have that up there once.
Oh, yeah, they definitely have that, sure.
But, man, being able to have all your own music, like, sort of backed up.
Well, you know, there was a company for a while that you'd send your CDs to them, and they'd rip them for you and put them online.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that did that same kind of thing, right? They only had one copy of that one song.
Right.
They didn't really rip your CDs. They just took your CDs and went, oh, this person gets these now.
Right, yeah.
Because, of course, they already had the collection of music. But that was one way to get around this issue of copyright. And I think it's becoming a lot less... important in the sense that the music industry understands there's money to be made online, so that at least that barrier has been removed.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what Google Music is, and will you let us know when we actually get there?
No problem.
Awesome. So
there's rumors that they'll announce it at Google I.O. in May, but it's not likely with the way things are going with the record label, so we'll see.
In a little while, Al's going to tell us about some awesome cowboy space stories, I'm hoping.
Nice.
Space colony stories, how about that? But first, Laurel, what's going on with Norland plants?
Oh, yeah. So this is kind of my favorite little story. One step closer to my own personal ability to be a cyborg. So they did this fantastic neural implanting in this woman who, unfortunately, she was paralyzed, unable to speak or move after experiencing a stroke. So these Brown University researchers, they actually implemented this this BrainGate brand neural implant into her brain in 2005. And it can read the impulses of her brain so that she's able to actually control a mouse cursor on a computer screen using only her thoughts.
Very cool.
Ooh.
Very cool. Wow. How are they tapping into the brain? Just long wires?
No, I mean it's it's actually an implant. It's actually the size of a baby aspirin that they've actually implanted, and they can do a kind of a similar sort of thing, actually just using a non-implanted mesh of you know diodes and wires
and things like that. I've worn those kind of brain things and try to give direction, and I was able to give sometimes one direction.
Yes.
So moving a mouse around a screen would be challenging. I'm assuming that the more you use this, the more you practice, the better it gets.
Yes.
I guess the question I have is this thing really just like lift one of the little squiggly of the brain and kind of stick it in there, or do they have to slice into the brain and actually implant it into the tissue?
I'm sure it's a pretty hardcore operation.
Yeah,
cool. Yeah.
But she's functioning in the sense that she's not completely paralyzed in the sense she has movement now. It just happens to be robotic.
Right, exactly. So she's able to perform a series of tasks using the mouse, and she's actually at greater than 90% accuracy, which is really reassuring.
Wow. Nice. That's really cool. I'm assuming that's better than eye tracking.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, and she can't move her eyes, so
she's really trapped.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, as she gets better at that, I'm assuming she'll start getting more devices to control.
The hope would be, I mean, this is all very, very early stages.
Yeah.
So they're actually just now starting to do early pilots for general use.
Yeah. How did she agree to this?
She blinked twice.
Blinked.
Yeah.
Do you want us to insert something into your brain? I think she means yes. No.
Yeah, the consent issue definitely a question mark.
I'm sure it was addressed really well. That's really cool to see some movement into tapping in. Of course, us geeks are all like, I could use an implant.
Oh.
This is when you have to get really, really friendly with your tech support, right? I mean, if you have a bad drive, you are not
good
having
point.
A good day.
Yeah.
Good point.
All right. I could just also imagine the implant receiving music from Google Music.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. Al, what's going on in the wonderful world of past art?
Well, there was a time, actually still kind of goes on, but in the 1970s, NASA's Ames Research Center gathered artists and basically tasked them with designing space colonies that would accommodate like 10,000 people. Okay. They got all these artists together. This was the 70s. And they would just make these pictures of what they envisioned, you know, just sort of brainstorming kind of stuff. They, you know, they weren't scientists. Well, they painted all these beautiful, beautiful photos and or pictures. And as a matter of fact, when I go through their library, which there will be a link to on geekspeak.org, and you can look at these yourself, you may recognize some of these because they ended up in a lot of books, like a lot of kids' books. When you're in grade school, you know, you remember seeing that like round, it looked like a floating tire in space. You know, people were inside of it. That's in here. There's all sorts of neat things. A lot of them, you know, are based on that circular idea. So it'd be spinning and there'd be gravity, but they've got like trees growing in there and people walking around with their shirts off. And of course it was the 70s. So there's a lot of sideburn action going on these people. So you kind of, but aside from that, I mean, it's really fun to look at these pictures. I don't know if you've had a chance to
see. Yeah, I love that. I love that past future look.
You know, they're sort of like Sid Mead did a lot of stuff like this as an artist. And I was, you know, I spent a lot of time looking at this, and it's really quite entertaining.
Did you whip out your sketchbook and start to draw on some?
I feel
cigars?
Like I want to, but when you see some of the stuff that they're doing, they're just fantastic.
You know,
like,
I don't even have a canister for my airbrush anymore. You know, I mean, come on.
They've got like lakes in there.
Yeah,
and
yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's kind of crazy, but it also brings you back to a time when, you know, people thought like this, you know.
The future didn't look so bleak.
And they came up with these cool ideas, and it sort of remembers you. It makes you remember all the stuff you saw, you know.
Right.
So you're around the 70s.
All right, thanks.
You know,
cool. So. 70s future art makes a comeback to some degree, at least in Al's mind. Thank you so much, Al. Lindsay, what's going on Facebook lately?
Lately, there was a reporting tool for bullying released, kind of geared towards teenagers having a hard time in their social circles. to prevent violence and suicidal tendencies and things like that. It was late last week that they actually released it. The reporting tool has 4 steps. So if you see something, a piece of content that's personally hurtful, you can click on the report link under it. It's like under a photo, the link will say report this photo. And if you select that option, you can say this photo is harassing or bullying me is a new option that they have. And then on the next page after you select that, it says block the person. You can either block them or not block them. I don't know why you would not want to, but and then there's an option to get help from a trusted friend. And when you select that, the next page will allow you to forward the content to anyone you want, parents, teachers, principals, other trusted adults, things like that.
Is this for private messages?
It's just within the application, any kind of content. So I think it's under all the pictures. And I don't know if I looked and it didn't say specifically whether it showed up for people who are between 13 and 18, because I think you have to be over 13. So I don't know if this only shows up if you're under 18 or if it's anything. I wasn't able to find it online.
It's a good issue to address, of course, because it's a very hard social system. I mean, it's a hard social thing to protect from. Bullying is really tricky.
Right.
I would assume that, of course, it's in Facebook. You know, it's easy. Any social structure is going to bully is going to exist. So it's neat that they're trying to address it. I'm curious how they came up with the idea of how to address it, because, of course, it's a really complex issue as well.
Right.
I mean, you could theoretically inversely use it, right, by 5 people saying, you know, picking on a person by saying they're a bully, and all of a sudden their content gets restricted, even though they're the one being bullied. So it's a very tricky technical problem. It's not just a technical problem, of course, it's a social problem. So at least they're kind of producing a second level of trusted network, you know, that other people can help. Yeah. I didn't know that you could have Facebook accounts that were below 18. So Facebook's managing that somehow? Do they get adult consent?
I'm guessing so. I haven't tried it myself. I looked around a little bit for information and didn't find anything.
I do have family and friends that are below 18 and using it, but I thought that was...
The comments on the article said that they allow over 13 with consent, but I didn't verify that.
All right, so bully protection on Facebook is coming.
And one of the cool things is that just its existence and the fact that it exists kind of helps address the issue. And it's sort of the playground equivalent of go tell an adult.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, good times.
Which doesn't always solve the problem, but thank you very much for that.
Sure.
Go tell a trusted adult.
Right.
All right, thank you very much. Let's go ahead and chat about Firefox, I assume, yes?
Yes, I just wanted to mention this because March 22nd, incredibly important holiday. It's the most wonderful time of the year. That would be the Firefox 4 download day.
Are you a Firefox 4 or Firefox user?
I am a diehard Firefox user. I'm just trying everything, but there's just nothing like... I don't know, it's kind of like having a Stradivarius or something like that, being a musician and really wanting the best tool for the job, and I have it so perfectly customized.
You know, one of the things I love about Firefox, and Chrome does this too, is saves all the open tabs.
Yes.
And one of the things I can't stand about it is it saves all the open tabs, because I'm notorious for keeping lots of stuff open. So then I'll end up wanting to do something quickly, and I'll jump on a Safari, because at least it won't have 500 tabs opening. So I need like a plugin that says you've reached your top 20 tabs, you have to close some now, something like that, so that I don't end up with too much bloat.
I am totally there. There's something called too many tabs, where you can take your tabs and kind of add them to this temporary storage place, so
really?
They're not actually sucking up memory while you're
learning something new every day.
Doing your thing. I also like Tab Mix Plus, which has a really nice session manager. And so you can choose, yes, please restore the session, or restore the one before.
What's
or the
called?
One before. Tab Mix Plus. So use that instead of the built-in Firefox session manager.
Learn something new every day. Thank you, Laurel.
Total fiend.
So when's the special day?
Special day was March 22nd. There were 7 million copies downloaded in the first 24 hours and 15.85 million in the first 48 hours.
Is it any good? Is Firefox 4 any good?
I think it's pretty good. I think I'm still a little crotchety, and I've got my Firefox 3 is so perfectly fine-tuned to all my needs. So the first thing you do is you install the nightly tester tools, and you say override compatibility for all your extensions, because you're like, dude, mouse gestures, that's not going to be a problem. No problem with the new Firefox 4. But they've moved some stuff around. They made it faster. Of course, HTML5 support. They're actually making use of the GPU in your your computer to do some of the loading and rendering and all that. So
the graphics processing unit, which is a graphics card.
It does a nice sync between all of your different Firefox instances. So I have, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 computers at this point.
How are they doing that? Who hosts the sync?
I'm not sure who hosts the sync, but it is that same kind of hosted sync that you can cloud install add-ons for. But cool, they've got a nice built-in.
Nice,
exactly.
I like that idea.
So web, you know, on your phone, wherever it is you use Firefox,
have all your bookmarks and possibly your plugins too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much for that update. I guess it's time to update Firefox 4. Is that the official browser of Geekspeak program? What do you think?
I use Chrome.
Guess.
You're going to use Chrome?
I don't like to lock us into something.
Yeah.
You know?
All right.
I mean,
what
Chrome has a lot of cred.
I've been using a combination of Chrome, Safari, and Firefox. I mean, Firefox just has, you can't meet it for the plug-in capability.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, if you like that customization stuff, none of the other browsers really has that kind of support.
I do a pretty custom system in some ways, but other ways I don't, because if I jump onto someone else's computer to help them and my everything's customized on my machine, it's very difficult to use their machine.
Yeah.
And that issue of being what the average user is doing is kind of important to me.
Right. That's why I like to use multiple browsers, because at the same time Firefox allows you with all these plugins and stuff like that, I can tell you that when you do that and you go, like for instance, when I log on to my own site and I go into my admin,
yeah.
It doesn't work in Firefox. Okay, because it's probably because one of my plugins, because it works in other people's Firefoxes.
Sure, sure.
So I'm like, so you're going to have that compatibility issue. It's going to be there. So I can't, you know, I guess a lot of Windows people just use Explorer because it's built in, which that's the only thing I wouldn't do.
Anyone here use Explorer?
sometimes. I mean, really? there are one or two work applications that really, really, literally only work with IE.
What about IE Tab in Firefox? It's a plugin that allows you to run IE inside of Firefox.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Sometimes it's nice just to do the IE things privately.
But I was going to recommend actually for Firefox, yet another little tip. You can actually have multiple Firefox profiles. So I always keep a clean one for web testing when I want to simulate the average user's browser experience on Firefox. And you can actually run two instances of Firefox simultaneously. There's a switch that you can run when you, shortcut.
Okay, it sounds like you're
And you can have a clean Firefox and a totally customized Firefox.
All right. Nice. Well, there you go. So you have a customized one for your admin.
I think that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Time to get some training from
But you should really keep an open mind with browsers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't be afraid to try new ones. And you know, the only problem with them is saving bookmarks, but you can use something like Delicious.
Yeah.
You know?
I use Delicious. Delicious is an application, a plugin that allows you to save your bookmarks to a remote location and then use it on any browser. I've lost track of all my bookmarks. I just use Google to find what I need to find.
Yeah, me too.
You know? And I do post them to my Delicious feed, but I don't go to Delicious to find them. I search for Lyle and then the topic, and then my Delicious feed shows up. Because that's me and it has my URLs, right? So I'm always searching to find
Google things. Is taking control of our whole lives.
Yes, and soon our music.
Yeah.
Thank you, Laurel, for that update on Firefox 4. Keep us abreast of Firefox news. I think it's very important. Al, you want to make a mention about expensive domain names?
Yes, there was a domain name recently purchased, and it is the domain is color.com.
And color.
Yes, and they paid $350,000 for it. It's still going on.
I mean, in the heyday, domains were being sold for millions.
Well, you had like slots.com went for like $5 million and, you know, of course, sex.com and those kind of things. But
a friend sold loans.com and bought a business from it.
Yeah. Oh,
nice.
Man. Yeah, this one is... this one's color.com, and they also bought color.com, the way that they English spell it.
Perfect. What are they doing with color.com?
Well, they have an iPhone app that both you and I have been trying today.
I was pretending like I didn't know.
I know, but we tried it.
It doesn't work, though, so don't waste your time.
Oh, by the way, that slots.com went for $15
million
a few years ago.
$15 million
yeah.
for domain name. Uh-huh. I mean, the thing that's
so frustrating is that... Slots went for $5.5 million. Sex.com went for $15
million.
Wow. Okay.
That's so amazingly frustrating. I mean, I was relatively early in the domain name area. I mean, I got my name. Luck out, you got your name. You even have Ben Lomond, right?
Yeah, I have benloman.org
right.
and
got a few. I mean, but I didn't think to go, well, let's sell these later and let's buy as many as possible. The friend that sold loans.com, the only reason he did it is he was doing mail service. So he wanted to make, you know, frank@loans.com as, you know, sell email addresses basically to people. But then realized, wait a second, these are worth money, and then sold them and did well. All right.
Nice.
Well, the idea was
so
the reason
it's not in that same kind of crazy space, but $350,000 for
it's a lot. But you know, they have an iPhone app, and supposedly it's supposed to be great. They have like
okay. So describe real quick what it's supposed to do.
Basically, you open the iPhone app called Color, and if people are within the vicinity of you and they are running the app at the same time, 150 feet, I guess it says, you all you know, join into the same network, and then you all take pictures, you know, at, say you're at a wedding, okay, and you're taking pictures of everybody at the wedding, and all those pictures kind of send to a group photo album.
So everybody can see their pictures.
So it's a fun thing to do, and everybody can see, and it looks like the UI looks okay to me, and you can, you know, go around and take all these pictures. So it sounds like a really neat idea, social picture taking.
Yeah. It's a great idea because, of course, any wedding space where lots of people have cameras, it makes sense to have all those pictures be available to the bride and groom.
Right. And it's kind of cool. Although you and I just tried it. And we couldn't get
but
it to work.
But it's possible we don't know what we're doing. Because maybe you have to go on the website and create an event.
So if you're a geek and you have a radio show and all you talk about is geek technology devices, you may not be able to figure this out.
But if you're an average person, it'll be fine.
But it looks like a good idea.
All right. So we had some... Thank you very much, Al, for that. you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Santa Cruz, California. We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Last night I was cleaning my house and I found this great cheat sheet from my father, who did radio a long time before me, that said, make sure that you have a drink of water next to you when you're on radio, because guess what? If you start scratching, Lindsay's doing it.
Yep.
Oh, I got a lozenge from Al. Sweet.
Yep. Always got a lozenge. Got to have
Everybody
a lozenge.
Should enjoy this, especially the podcast listeners that are listening on their earbuds.
Yeah.
There we go. So what I wanted to mention is that we had some corrections from last week's show. We talked a little bit about nuclear fission last year. Last week we spoke with Dr. Shorey about a lot of topics, and we had a couple corrections requested. One of them was that it wasn't really described very well. John sent a note that talked about it wasn't really described very well what the actual threat is in Japan from last week. I haven't kept up with the news this week, but the issue was it's not really doing a fission reaction anymore, and it's just what is it called? Degrading, not degrading.
Decaying.
Decaying. Thank you very much. It's just decaying. Well, actually, every decay is actually a fission reaction because it's splitting. It's decaying from one atom to a second atom. So we don't normally call those fission reactions because normally when we talk about a fission reaction, we're talking about a chain reaction event where one nucleus from one fission reaction triggers another fission reaction. And that's the issue with a nuclear reaction going critical, but that wasn't exactly the issue because there's control rods in place and that's not happening. But what's happening and what Dr. Shorey was talking about was that those rods, the control rods are in place, and if the system keeps heating up, if they can't cool it enough, even the fission reaction of the breakdown can cause enough heat where the structural integrity of the rods could fail. And if that happened, you could see those pellets falling down to a basin floor, and then they would be close enough potentially to do a chain reaction and to do potentially a meltdown. Now, we're not saying that that's the likely case at all, but we were covering that that could happen, and that's why it's so crucial they keep that temperature down. And then one of the things, we had a little bit of dialogue, the second thing was that I mentioned that California is reliant mostly on coal for its energy. That's not true. It's natural gas. I apologize. I did mean, you know, fossilized fuels, right? But in any case, it's natural gas that mostly runs California. And it's a much better power source than coal. The last thing is that Johnson another mentioned back talking about that one of the questions I asked at the end of the show was not a very fair question. Now, this is actually something Miles pinged me about afterwards. I asked Dr. Shorey, is it possible to make a nuclear power plant completely safe? Now, I'm asking a scientist an engineering question. I'm talking to a scientist who's not a nuclear engineer, a engineering question, and that's just not very polite. It also is, of course, there is no absolutes, and any scientist would know that. So it was a bad question. Miles kind of berated me after the show about it. And what I was trying to get to was that, and I phrased it completely wrong, that is, can't we make nuclear power plants that can survive and do well even after a large earthquake, even a 9.6? Is it possible for humans to do that? And of course, at some point, it's not possible to deal with it, right? But there has to be a level that's above where we failed this time. All right, that's for last week's updates and such. Al, give me a break on talking and tell me about the geek bit of the week, please.
The geek bit. Well, I can talk about another photo app, which is actually pretty cool. It's called PhotoSwap.
And this one works.
And this one actually works. And I've been trying it, and it works really, really well. It's an iPhone app, but I believe they have an Android app as well. And what you do on PhotoSwap is you just walk around, you take pictures, and you take a picture, and then you say, post, and then as soon as you post it, you get a picture back from somewhere else in the world that somebody else has been doing at the exact same time. And I've been doing it here in the studio, and you know, you type it, and there's only a couple, you can't chat back and forth, but you just get this picture back, and then if the person agrees in their preferences, you're able to see where in the world this picture was taken, you know, through the GPS. Also, you can see the person's name in like one, sort of like a mood message in Skype, yeah. Like a comment, like
which is kind of what your general comment about you, not yeah. about the photos specifically.
Right. So you just walk around and take the pictures, and then you can reply with pictures. Like if you see a picture and you hit reply, you can send another picture back to that person.
I got to say, this thing is really cool. And the reason mm-hmm. is that it's very much like an art piece, right? You're not yeah. communicating in the general sense. You're just sharing photographs.
It's
That's
all
it.
Visual. Yeah.
And it's kind of akin to sending a random person a postcard and then that person sending someone else random. And it's not like by default it's a communication because it's only a one-way thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of neat. And, of course, you can do the reply thing. It was yeah. really – I was driving down using your phone. I've mm-hmm. just installed it on my phone.
What's it called again?
It's called PhotoSwap.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have this up on geekspeak.org, of course. And it's by Padaz, PADAZ.com. Mm-hmm. And it's a fun little thing to do because every time you take a picture, I'll take a picture of Lindsay right now and someone in the world will get that, use that one. And then I get a picture back, which has nothing to do with GeekSpeak, but just about someone else in the world.
A lot of times back. it's just like a tree.
Yeah, this is just a gray area.
Yeah, or the somebody's foot or yeah, a TV foot. Or it's, you know, I get like a lot of like Japanese like food. Right. Back.
That's not bad.
And so it's just interesting. You know, just a thing you can sit around and do for...
I wish you could kind of tag them, too, so you could start seeing them based off of mm-hmm. strings of text and stuff. But I do like the idea that it's very simple.
Just very simple, yeah.
Random pictures and from free. Random people.
It's free.
Very cool. Yeah. Photo swap. Mm-hmm. That's the Geek Beat of the Day. We are speaking with Lindsay and Al and Laurel. And my name's Lyle. And we are taking questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 1-800-655-5877. The lozenge is not working. 1-800-655-5877. That's better. I don't sound like I have something in my mouth. We're taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. I believe we already have some phone calls coming in. Here we do. Southbound 17, there's a tree down between Sims Road and the Fishhook. Looks like all southbound traffic being diverted onto Sims Road.
That's how we're getting home, I think.
I think that must be how we're going home. Well, that's... Yeah, that's southbound traffic going to Sims Road. So,
oh,
yikes. We don't need to do that because we're going to go north. Mardine, let's go ahead and speak with Mardine, shall we? Mardine from Ben Lomond, what's your question or comment today?
That's deep.
Wow, that was a really good question. Mm-hmm. Mardine, would you repeat yourself, please? Hi.
Are you there?
Yes. What's your question today?
Uh-oh. I'm here.
Go ahead, Mardine.
Ah, there we go. I have several podcasts that I like to listen to and update every week, and I have them on my iTunes account. And I go and, you know, update the podcast, the new ones appear, and I drag them into my Finder for my Zen MP3 player. And sometimes they work and sometimes they don't.
Are they MP3s?
What I mean is I pull it down into the space for the Zen, you know, it should load it onto the Zen, and there's a little counter that starts, you know, telling me how long it's going to take to upload it, and sometimes that starts up, and then sometimes it just doesn't, and I can't upload that podcast, even though it's there in my iTunes.
But when you drag it, are you dragging it into the Finder, you're actually dragging it into a folder? Are you dragging it directly
yeah.
onto the icon of the Zen?
The Zen is in the left side of the Finder uh-huh. as one of the, like a drive.
Okay.
All right, so click on that to open up its window, and I just drag it into that window.
And when you drag it in, sometimes a file transfer happens and sometimes it doesn't happen?
Right.
Okay. I think it's probably an iTunes issue, and that is that the interface for iTunes, depending on what screen view you're looking in, is showing a playlist representation of the file or the file. And what I would think you want to do instead is kind of use the Finder directly instead of using iTunes as your drag source. That's just my guess. If you hold down the control key on your Mac and you click on the file that you want to listen to or transfer over, it's gonna give you a right click. It's gonna give you a contextual mouse click, and you're gonna see a little drop down menu. And the drop down menu is gonna say something like "Show in Finder." And when you do that, you'll actually a Finder window will open up, which actually has that podcast folder. The only issue is it won't tell you whether you've played this, that podcast or not. And I guess yours isn't going to tell you anyway.
Have you tried using Zencast?
No, I've never heard of that.
Zencast, it lets you subscribe to and manage podcasts for your Zen player.
Right.
Zencast.com.
Okay.
And that might be the solution. I mean, just to, if you're having issues, I mean, it's designed for the Zen.
Yeah, Zen is a creative company product. They've got a whole bunch of different versions of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of those things where iTunes really fails. If you don't have an Apple MP3 player, you're kind of in this weird space. I assume that you can do this in iTunes as well, but I've never seen somebody do it.
Yeah.
Does anyone know?
So tell me again, how do I start to do what you first described?
If you want to know where the files are for your music in iTunes, all you have to do is right-click on the file and then say Show File.
In the podcast menu?
In iTunes, anywhere actually in iTunes where there's a playing file. But to if you don't have a right mouse button, you have to use the
it
control button.
It might say Reveal.
Reveal? Okay, now I'm
not sure.
iTunes.
Like Reveal. You're on a PC, I would assume.
No, Finder.
You're on a Mac?
Yeah, it's a Mac.
Oh, so you have a Zen player using a Mac.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, I know.
It's allowed.
It's oftentimes a person with a Windows machine might be using Zen. Okay.
I have both, actually, but the iTunes is loaded on the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Let me see. I'm checking right now. If you right-click on the song file, it says a whole bunch of things. Show in Finder.
Yeah.
It's like the sixth item down. And when you do that, it's going to open up a Finder window, which actually have the music for that album or for that podcast all in a big row, and then you can just drag it over. Now, it's very possible that it won't be an MP3 file because some people don't do that with MP3 files, and I don't know what the Zune actually supports. So you might run into other problems there, but there you go. Good luck.
So I just want to be sure. So when I try to go do this, I'm going to do it right. If I open up my iPod section
in iTunes,
and I have – I'm sorry, my podcast section. Okay, I've got like all this list of NPR shows that I want to download.
And Geekspeak.
Yes, of course.
Well, she listens live.
I right click on the. There's like a header in each one, and then all the shows.
No,
that
don't
I
do the header. Do the show itself.
Below that.
Do the show itself. Do the show itself.
Okay, so right click.
Just
on
like
the
if you
time,
if you were to play it in iTunes, you double click it. This time, instead of double clicking it, just.
Or you hold the control key down to
that's effectively a right click.
Yeah.
It's either right click, which is the right mouse button if you've got that, or hold down the control key and use the left mouse button, and you'll have a little drop down box on any of the songs.
Okay.
And then you say Show in Finder. And then after that, you're going to have a Finder location of exactly where iTunes library is, and you can navigate that thing. And it's pretty well structured. I wouldn't try moving things around because iTunes is going to fight with you, but you can definitely copy from there to another source. Good luck. Thank you, Martine, for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Of course, if you've got further questions for us, you're welcome to send us email all throughout the week at geekspeak.org. You just fill out a little form, prove that you're not a robot, and we will work with you. Tom from Santa Cruz, what's up?
Yeah. Hey, hi. I'm trying to do a project, and I'm an idiot when it comes to computers, but acoustics I'm great at. What I have was I have a computer with two USB ports, and I want to build a workbench for projects and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Well, anyways, I found a site where I downloaded an oscilloscope and, let's say, a signal generator and stuff like that, for my computer, and that saves a lot of money with the workbench.
Sure.
But I was wondering if I, and since this is just a computer I found, if I, let's say, have an oscilloscope and one USB port,
mm-hmm.
and then I have then I use a signal generator in the other port, and will those signals get mixed up in the computer there, so testing for, let's say, on an amplifier?
I would test that. I would test it. Do a signal generation. Don't use anything. Don't connect them together, right, and see what the oscilloscope's free range is going to show up. It also depends on what kind of stuff you're going to be doing, right? If you're going to do a lot of low-impedance stuff, it's going to be hard to do this. USB devices are not exactly as clean as possible. There are some wireless devices like this that do battery-operated oscilloscopes and such,
uh-huh.
which are probably a better choice just because you don't have a hard line to your computer. The other thing is, if you're doing any high-voltage stuff, I wouldn't do this.
Yeah.
And I know that the manufacturer of these products are going to be like, oh, no, it's okay, but, high voltage going right to your USB port, unless you don't care about the computer very much or your fingers.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Good luck.
Wait, I still have another question, though.
Okay, one more question, Tom.
Okay, one more question. I downloaded WinZip.
Yeah.
And my computer didn't work for a bit, and now that has expired, and a lot of my stuff is also WinZip. what do I have to do to get that my information out of them?
I think you got to buy it.
Buy the product,
don't you?
A whole bunch of files are now WinZip. You can open those files with a different extracting application. Right now, the .zip extension is assigned directly to the application WinZip. It doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in Explorer and you right-click again, actually, do you view options? I'm not on a Windows machine. Lindsay, are you going to try to solve this one?
Yeah.
You basically
need to
reassign.
Right-click properties, I think.
Right-click properties?
Yeah.
I think that's right. If you right-click properties, you'll find what the extension is assigned to. You can assign it to something else. The other thing you can do is just find another extracting application that supports zip and drag the files to zip to that application, and it will unencrypt it.
I really like 7-Zip, so that's the number 7-Zip. It's a free tool, and it will, when you're installing, it'll automatically change those file associations, so you kind of don't have to think about
that's
it.
And we'll
solution
put
right
that
there.
Up on the show, geekspeak.org. Just check it out, the show page today. Thank you so much, Tom. Good luck.
Okay.
All right, well, let's go and see if we can get to another couple calls. Judith from Watsonville, welcome back.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I just recently got a new MacBook Pro.
Welcome.
Oh, so I'm excited about that because I've been using an old iBook. But a friend was asking me about security and virus protection and stuff, and I was listening to one of your old shows and to help him. And then I heard something about it's important to have a router. I've just had my my little Razzlelink connection right up to my my iBook. And
what are you connecting up to the iBook?
What?
What are you connecting up to the iBook? The DSL modem?
It's a high speed internet, but it's not DSL, it's not cable, and it's not satellite.
It's,
it goes
to
a ground base station.
Sure, it's terrestrial based Wi-Fi service.
Yes.
What's the company you're using?
Razzlelink.
Okay, haven't heard of them. So the issue with routers is that in the internet we talk about IPv4, it's IP version 4 and version 6 coming along, but basically there are numbers that are assigned to computers in the internet. If you have one of these public numbers, that public number, that means that everything on your computer, all the access points is available, meaning that it's in the public, right? It's like standing on the New York street. And what we're always saying is, you know what, instead of doing that, put a router in front, basically get into a store, and then stand in the store. So you've got that one layer of protection. And that's kind of an okay metaphor. It's not very good. But that's why we suggest a router. Now, it's possible that the company that's giving you Wi-Fi isn't giving you a public address. It's possible they're already doing this for you. And you can discover that by looking up what your IP address is on your Mac Pro. So you want to go to Network Preferences. And in the top area of Network Preferences, go to System Preferences, click on Sharing. And when you're in the sharing environment, it'll tell you how to access your machine. If that IP address is what's called a public IP address, you're in trouble.
Uh-huh.
And if not, you're okay. The other way to do is call their tech support, ask that question about, am I getting a public IP address, which might be a better way to do it. And the last stage is, you're on a Mac, you're probably pretty good. I mean, I don't run any virus protection. I'm on a MacBook Pro, and I have a public IP address whenever I'm at work, and it's never been a problem for me. Geeks, comments?
I tend to think that, you know, the virus isn't really the issue. If you are in a spot where you're like in a, you know, an apartment building or something, and there's like 100 people around you, and everybody's got their own network, chances are there's somebody who's, you know, going to be sleeking around. If you just live in a house and you don't really have, really.
You're looking at the protection of your
I have a wired connection. Mm-hmm. I don't have a wireless connection. I don't know whether that helps it be a little. I live way out in the country.
Yeah, I wouldn't even worry about it if you're out in the country.
Well, you do have a wireless connection. It's to your house, right?
It was a wireless connection to the house, but it's a wired connection to the modem.
The thing is, actually, depending on how they're transmitting that protocol, that could be clear text transformation. It depends on how the company's implementing it. Meaning that, theoretically, if you're checking your email account, but you're not doing it through a secure sockets layer, it's possible that someone could sniff in and listen in on your signal and see your email and see your password and such. And that has to do with about using good passwords and good security measures, mostly about using SSL for your transportation of content. And What email client are you? Who's providing email to you?
I use MobileMe.
Okay,
is probably my primary one, and also
I have a
Gmail account. And
so both of those are going to force you to use good SSL layers. So you're going to be okay in your email. I wouldn't worry about it very much. I think Al's response is pretty good. We're going to get some diehard security people like Alex saying, no, of course you should worry about it. Definitely get a router. The general rule, yes, get a router. They're not expensive, and since you're doing a plug-in thing, it really is like going and getting a box that says, home router, plugging in the WAN port to the thing that serves your internet and the LAN port to your computer, and it will work right out of the box. You don't have to do anything else, except that I would try to log into it and change the password, the admin password.
Now, a lot of them are wireless, so you could do that you too. Get the router, and then you have wireless... Yeah, you know, in your house.
I don't want I want it wired route. Wired.
Okay.
I don't quite share some of your enthusiasm about wireless, I prefer wired.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for phrasing it that way so we don't have to get into discussion about that. Thank you very much, Judith. Good luck.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Wired is a bit faster anyway.
Oh, yeah. It's more stable. You don't have a problem with the microphone coming on.
If you don't mind a wire sticking onto your computer... Nothing wrong with wired.
If you've got a place for your computer to sit and that's where you use it, plug in.
Yep.
That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've got time for another call, at least.
Okay.
But I don't know who this is. Okay, let's do some more Weather Service information. Weather Service has issued a flood warning in effect until 11:30 a.m. in Santa Cruz, Scotts Valley, and Capitola. It's in effect until 11:30 a.m. today. Need to get info on, what else we have about this? Locations in the warning include, but are not limited to, Scotts Valley, Santa Cruz, and Capitola. The law enforcement officials say that the report flooding was occurring around the Capitola area. A flood warning means that flooding is imminent or has been reported. Excessive runoff from moderate rainfall on saturated soils will cause elevated levels of small creeks and streams, ponding of water on highways, streets, and underpasses, as well as other poor drainage areas in low-lying spots. Be careful out there, people. It's even if it stopped raining,
it's very wet.
We have
wet.
We have a large water basin here. A lot of mountains. A lot of water is coming down from Santa Cruz. Roberta, welcome to GeekSpeak. Oh, I'm sorry, Robert. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Oh, yeah. That was interesting. Thanks for taking my call. What I'm calling about is, I actually emailed you guys a couple days ago about this, but once in a while I like to download videos off of YouTube.
All right. The converter?
What's that?
You're the guy that emailed us about the converter saving them?
Yeah.
And you were worried that there was a virus or it was a bad... when you downloaded it, it's asked you to give permissions and you were concerned about that?
Yeah, this one's called Keep Vid, and I've heard people talk about it and use it, and I used it for a while. And it used to, every time I would restart my computer and my browser and go to that site, it's not software you download, so you do it directly through that site. You enter in the URL of the video, and then they download it for you. And it used to ask me something else, like, do you accept a certificate or approve a certificate or something? And I would say yes. And now, when I go there, it asks... It says KeepVid is asking for unrestricted access to your computer.
Yeah, I didn't really respond to because I'm not familiar with this app, and I was hoping one of the other geeks that knew about it would. But it sounds to me like it's a Java applet that's running that's asking for more permissions. And the reason is that the Java environment is a very sandboxed, relatively safe environment. You have to give it permissions to actually have write ability on your computer, which is really important, of course, because you went to geekspeak.org and we decided to download all of our shows onto your laptop and fill up your computer. We could do that without that kind of restriction. So what happens instead is you write an application, a Java application that says to the user, hey, can I write stuff to your computer? And if they say yes, then Java allows that application to write to the computer. That's basically what this application sounds like to me. It could be at SilverFox. There's a lot of different technologies that are like this, but it's the same basic idea. Let the user decide whether they're going to have permissions or not. And when you give that permission, you're saying, I'm okay with this website doing whatever they want to do on my computer, in the sense that what they want to do, what they're promising to do, right? You have to decide whether you trust that vendor enough to allow them to have unfettered access to your computer. And that choice is something we make anytime we install software. Anytime you go and say yes and then enter your password in on a computer and say install yourself on this machine, you're saying the same thing. So, Laurel supports Firefox, and every time she installs Firefox, she's trusting that the group of people that are developing Firefox are not doing something malicious on her computer. And that level of trust exists. We do it all the time. So really, the only question you're really asking is, do you trust this company? And personally, me, I wouldn't. But you have a long history with them, so you have a better understanding
also,
of what kind of
Lauren,
trust you have.
Lauren, isn't there a Firefox plugin called, I think it's called, creatively, Downloader.
and it allows you to go to, it's free, it's a plugin for Firefox, you're in YouTube, it's a little button that appears in your browser, you click on it, and it allows you to not only download it, but it convert it at the same time to either Flash video or iPod video.
Thing that's convenient about that plugin, of course, is that it's ranked and used by a large community.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it's not asking to do a lot of writing, it's only asking to integrate itself into the download process, which means that it doesn't have to have unfettered access to your computer. It only has to have convert and processing time.
Yeah,
so there are several plugins that let you download YouTube videos or convert them or save them as HD versions or that kind of thing for later use. So and they're vetted, they're hosted on Mozilla.org and that kind of thing. So generally pretty safe.
Now what if he's already said yes to this? That's the question we have next. You can go ahead and uninstall you can uninstall the privileges, and I think it's under security in your browser, under Java or under Security Advanced, things like that. You can probably disable that feature. Okay?
Okay. And these Firefox plugins are available for Mac as well.
Oh, yeah. Firefox plugins are normally universal. There's a few that aren't.
The one I use is on Mac. So.
Yeah. And, what Robert's trying to do is go to a YouTube site, YouTube video, and then get a downloaded local copy. And it's actually not that hard to do. This whole idea about whether you're streaming video or non-streaming video is semantics more than anything else. It's trust of applications. And the basic idea is if I say, hey, I'm streaming video, it's not like it somehow doesn't get to, Laurel's computer. It does get to Laurel's computer. She's just not saving it. That's the only choice. So it's really on the receiving end, the person that's actually viewing the content, whether they save it or not. And by default, the Flash player inside that YouTube provides doesn't save. These plugins say, let's add that feature back in. Pretty simple, actually, idea.
Okay. My concern was the thing that was asking change at some point. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, that can change for a lot of things. The developers could decide they wanted different kinds of accesses. That's kind of disturbing because what if they want something else that they didn't have before, like wanting to write to your system area or something like that. So that's problematic. The other possibility is that the browser you're using's permission warnings changed, and the other thing is that Java could have changed. On how they provide the plugin, if you will, could have changed on how they warn you. This kind of changes happens all the time. It's very specifically different in different browsers. Safari does it differently than Firefox, and Internet Explorer does it differently. They all kind of communicate a different scary the sky is falling kind of space. And I got to say that being conscious about what installs on your computer, Robert, it's a really good idea. More people should be doing what Robert does. Think before you install an application. That's actually why we have a lot of bad code on computers and why so much spam is happening, because lots of people just say, okay, and then they're running something inappropriate. Robert, thank you much for the call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Everything we talk about on GeekSpeak is available at geekspeak.org. Today's geeks were Lindsay Lonnie, and she is a
systems analyst works for now.
Thank you. And we also had Laurel Klein. She's a developer relations person. And we also have Mr. Al Luckow, a new media architect. And GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by CruiseIO Internet, now offering flexible workspace with 10 gigabit of fiber internet in their new building at 877 Cedar Street in downtown Santa Cruz. All of the details are online at CruiseIO.com or by calling CruiseIO at 459-6301. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Atheists of Santa Cruz and Monterey Counties, hosting monthly meeting details at 831-216-6112. Facebook.com/friendlyfreethinkers. Friendly Free Thinkers. Or online search term Santa Cruz Atheists Meetup. Atheists of Santa Cruz and Monterey Counties, a secular community group. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org for KOSP and for GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. Car Talk is coming up next, and it's made possible by a grant from the Holly Family Fund at the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County, and we appreciate their support. If you appreciate what you've listened to today on GeekSpeak, you're welcome to read more about it up on our website, geekspeak.org, where we put all the links and content and more comments you can make if you'd like about the show up at our website. GeekSpeak.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online internet with David Lawrence. It is used with permission. Until next week, I will see you. Bye.